And now, our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man 2, Blood on the Divide. Narrated by Mort Shelby, with performances by Richard Rowan, Terrence Aisleford, Nanette Savard, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Kate Torrey, Christopher Graybill, Johann Detweiler, Ted Stoddard, Dan Smith, M.B. Van Dorn, Tim Carlin, Michael Replogle, James Konacek, Thomas Penny, Michael Glenn, Colleen Delaney, James Lewis, Elliot Dash, and Christopher Walker. He was called Preacher. No one knew his real name. Sometimes even he had difficulty remembering it. Years back, he'd earned the name Preacher after being taken captive by a warring tribe. And when he saw they were about to torture him to death, he started preaching. He preached all day and all that night. Well, the Indians finally concluded he was crazy and they let him go. He'd been preacher ever since, and he was known from the far north of Canada down to the deserts of the southwest, from the Mississippi to the Pacific. He was also known as one hell of a bad man to tangle with. Preacher looked to be about average in size, but he was strong, lean-hipped, and whip-leather tough. He was handsome in a rugged sort of way. He was of the breed called mountain men. He knew or had known most of the famous and infamous mountain men of his time. Jedediah Strong Smith, Joe Walker, Bridger, Beckworth, the Cherokee Negro Ed Rose, who became a Crow chief with a harem of four wives. Old Bill Williams, that sour and secretive man who was more than once accused of cannibalism. Kit Carson, who could only ride his own name and read nothing at all, but yet he became a brigadier general in the U.S. Army. Hugh Glass, who was badly mauled by a grizzly but took so long to expire his friends got tired of waiting around for him to croak and left him to die alone. But Hugh fooled him. He managed to crawl to a Sioux village and the Indians nursed him back to health. Mountain men were notoriously hard to kill. Preacher knew them all, and they all respected him. While Preacher was by no means the very first mountain man, he was certainly there during the heyday and lasted long after that chapter was closed and all but forgotten. Indians still sing songs about Preacher, and some say Preacher still rides the ghost trails of the High Lonesome. Preacher had been smelling smoke for a couple of days, and when the plumes finally came into view, he had steeled his mind and stomach to the horrible sight of dead, mutilated, and tortured bodies of men, women, and children.
Too damn many people in their wagon trains trying to move west. This land is for settlers. Why in the hell don't people see that?
He topped the ridge and stared in utter disbelief.
It's a damn settlement. A diddly damn settlement right in the middle of nowhere.
Preacher counted the houses. Five houses and a big, long log building that was probably some sort of community meeting house that also served as church and schoolhouse.
Disgusting.
Preacher had seen some white folks just last week, and now he'd run up on some more. The wilderness was filling up faster than a damn city.
Why in the hell don't people stay to home? If this keeps up, in 2-3 more years, there'll be a damn road all the way from New York State to the blue of the Pacific. Women flapping their dress tails and shaking their bustles and batting their eyes. And they'll have hordes of squalling kids running around and farmers cutting up the land and growing things. And the engines are going to get all riled up and go on the warpath and there'll be graveyards filling up faster than who'd have thunk it.
It made Preacher sick to his stomach just thinking about it. He shook his head and his horse, Hammer, turned an impassive eye toward him, ears flicking.
Horse, Do we want to go down yonder and listen to a whole passel of nonsense out of the mouths of them pilgrims?
Hammer didn't like people no more than Preacher did. Preacher swung down from the saddle and stretched, then squatted down on the ground, eyeballing the settlement from his position on the ridge.
Well, I gotta admit, somebody down there has him an eye for the land. They picked him a right nice spot to light on.
There was a pretty little creek running soft and sweet down there, with stands of cottonwood and willow and oak and elm dotted all about. Preacher guessed that Fort William was about 40 miles away. He'd been figuring on meeting up with some old boys there and getting drunk and telling lies and dancing and shooting and lots of other good stuff. But this totally unexpected sight had shaken him right down to his moccasins. He couldn't figure just what the hell these people were doing out here. The summers were hotter than the hinges of hell, and the winters were brutal. This wasn't crop land. Preacher figured those folks down yonder might raise kids, but that was about it.
I guess I'll just ride on around these crazy folks and leave them be. Because if I do ride down yonder, they're going to be asking my opinion on matters, wanting me to stay and help out, and there'll be some white woman sure as hell without no man. She'll be sashaying around and winking and giggling and wiggling this and that, and boy, I'll be trapped down there for the winter with barely being spring hereabouts already.
Preacher rubbed his face. He'd shaved his beard off, leaving only a mustache. This time of year, fleas tended to gather in a woolly beard. He'd gotten shut of people last fall, leaving them over to Fort Vancouver. Missionary types, come to spread the good word to the savages. He'd spent a quiet and peaceful winter holed up in a favorite cabin of his, and he was in no mood to put up with another bunch of silly pilgrims who should have stayed back in Pennsylvania or New York or wherever the hell they came from. For a minute, he tried to figure out if the year was either 38 or 39. He wasn't sure. That would make him about 35 or 36. Well, he wasn't sure about that either. Close enough. Movement caught Preacher's eyes, and he shifted his gaze without moving his head. Hammer's head came up, and his ears were pricked.
Steady, old hoss. They ain't Injuns, but I expect they ain't up to no good. Not the way they're moving so quiet-like.
Preacher watched the half-dozen riders approach the settlement from the northeast, taking great pains to keep the line of trees along the creek between the buildings and themselves. The mountain man remained where he was, watching the valley below him. Pretty little valley it was, too. The settlers had them plowed-up gardens about to sprout, milk cows and goats and chickens and the like. Sure looked to Preacher like they'd come to stay. During the time he'd squatted on the knoll, he had counted 5 growed-up men, 8 filled-out females, 4 good-sized teenagers, and what looked to be a whole tribe of kids. 2 of the women were ample ladies. Didn't appear to Preacher that none of them folks down yonder had ever missed a meal, but them 2 ladies in particular would near about take a whole bolt of cloth to make just one of them a dress. Well, not quite, but close. Ample ladies could keep a man warm in the winter and cool in the summer, though, because they give off lots of shade. Preacher leaned against his hawking rifle and watched as the half-dozen riders reined up, still hiding behind the line of trees, and dismounted, just like if anyone was watching, it would appear that they was going to have him a drink and a rest by the creek. But Preacher didn't believe that for 1 second.
They ain't up to no good, Hammer. Get on up there.
Staying in the timber, Preacher angled around and headed toward the creek. When he reached the banks, he cut north, headed into the cottonwoods, and stopped. Preacher watched the families going about their business. He could smell fresh-baked bread, which got his mouth to watering, for he was mighty low on supplies. He could just about taste hot bread, all smeared with butter and a tall glass of milk from the coolness of the well ledge. The riders moved out of the trees.
They was decent folks, Hammer. They'd already made their presence known. So I gotta figure they ain't nothing but a pack of highwaymen who run out of highways back east and come out here to rob and kill. I reckon we'll see about that in short enough time.
Preacher sat his saddle and waited. He had him a hunch the riders would pretty soon ride on into the settlement, all smiles and howdy-do's. And then when the settlers was unexpected of it, they'd jump him. Then it came to him.
6 riders. Son of a bitch, the Pardee brothers. Sure. That pack of no-counts from Ohio.
At least that's where they claimed they'd been whelped. Preacher wasn't sure about that. The Pardee brothers was so sorry he doubted any woman would have the nerve to lay claim to him. He watched their ponies cross the creek, and leaving his pack horse in the trees, Preacher rode Hammer straight up into the clearing on the knoll. He arrived a couple of minutes before the Pardees could make it. The settlement rushed up to meet him once they saw he wasn't an Injun. Preacher noticed with some degree of satisfaction that the men were all armed. Well, that meant they wasn't all totally ignorant.
You got a bunch of scalawags riding up on you here, folks. Don't trust them, don't present your backs to them. I think it's the Pardee brothers, and them's the sorriest pack of white trash that ever sat a saddle on a stolen horse.
The children all stared wide-eyed at Preacher. They'd probably never seen a mountain man before, because if that breed of man didn't wish to be seen, then by God, he wasn't. Preacher's old black hat was battered, and he had a musket ball hole in it. He was dressed all in buckskins and wore high-top leggings. Behind the sash around his lean waist were two 50-caliber pistols. On holsters attached to the saddle were two more pistols of like kind. He carried one of the biggest knives any of the kids or the adults had ever seen. It had been handmade for him by a top knife maker in New Orleans. The scabbard for the razor-sharp blade was beaded and very elaborate. A boy of about 15 tore his eyes away from the weapons and looked out to the edge of town. Preacher twisted in the saddle and eyeballed the riders.
Riders coming, Pa!
Yep, it's some damn worthless parties, all right.
Hello, the settlement! We're friendly and white!
Just like I figured. They come in all smiles and grins, and when they get you to trust them, they'll cut your throats and have their way with the women and even the girl children 10 years and up, too. Don't doubt it none.
Why should we believe you?
Preacher eyed the woman who spoke. No surprise, she was one of the ample ones.
Well, ain't no reason to, except that I'm known from Missouri to Oregon as a man of my word.
Preacher swung down from the saddle, hawking in hand, and flipped the reins to a youngster.
Son, stable him safe before the shooting starts, if it starts. And be careful, he bites and kicks.
Preacher faced the line of approaching riders and aimed the hawking at him, steady as a rock.
Malachi Pardee! Hold it right there, you snakehead!
Who would you be, friend?
I damn sure ain't your friend, Malachi. You nor none of them damn worthless brothers of yours. Now you hear me, Malachi? You'll not scallyg after these good folks like you done them poor movers up on the paint rock.
I don't know what you mean, friend.
Malachi stood up in the stirrups trying to see who was hurling the insults at him. Movement down by the creek caught Preacher's attention.
All your people gathered here?
Yes, sir. Why?
There's more of them down by the creek. I heard that Malachi had them a regular gang now. You men see to your families. All the women and kids in the buildings. Now move. I think we're only minutes from being attacked. If they're stupid, that is. And they is.
They appear to be nothing more than harmless vagabonds to me.
Lady, you best get moving. As much body as you got to tote around, you're going to be the last one in the house anyway.
Oh, well, I never...
Come on, move, people!
It's that damn meddling preacher. Where in the hell did he come from? I thought he'd be down at the rendezvous.
The line of men and women and kids stopped suddenly and slowly turned around. Everybody from St. Louis to Vancouver knew that name.
The mountain man. Preacher?
Yeah, I've been called that. Get in the buildings, dammit!
Pa, he's famous.
And vulgar.
The stout woman jerked her dress up past her knees and went up the grade like a buffalo heading toward a wallow. She was the first one inside the big building. Preacher ducked down and took shelter behind one of the wells the men had dug. He looked at the boy holding Hammer's reins.
Stay in the stable, lad. If you can shoot, there's a brace of pistols on the saddle.
You want me to shoot a man?
Forget it! Pilgrims, they're gonna be the death of me yet.
The one shot appeared to be all the Pardees wanted to give this time around. They had lost the element of surprise, and they hadn't counted on Preacher being anywhere within 500 miles of the settlement. Preacher ran up the slope to the flats where the buildings were located and climbed up on the sod roof of the cabin. He stood and watched the Pardees link up with half a dozen more men and then ride off.
Scum and trash.
Preacher hopped down to the ground. The boy's ma and pa came out of the community building and stood by Preacher.
They'll be back, won't they?
You got food, clothing, possessions, and fair females. Hell yeah, they'll be back. You men stand ready. You had any problem with the Injuns?
A bit. But once they saw we would fight, they left us alone.
Oh, that don't have nothing to do with the Pilgrim. Injuns is notional folks. They might have taken a liking to you. They do that sometimes. Maybe on that day they felt their medicine was bad. But out here in the Big Empty, you always stay ready for a fight with the Injuns. More and more people coming out here is really going to stir them up. This is Cheyenne and Arapahoe country mostly. But at one time or another, you'll have bands from a dozen tribes wandering through. Any one of them can and will lift your hair, except to maybe the Crow. They'll just steal your horses, usually. How long you folks been here?
We arrived last summer and just managed to get our homes built before the winter came. I'm Robbie McGregor, and this is my wife, Coratine.
Pleased, I'm sure. I'm Preacher. Y'all got anything to eat?
The settlers ushered Preacher indoors to Millard and Rosanna's home and set him up with a decent plate of grub. The children sat on the floor and watched in awe as Preacher ate. They had never seen anybody his size eat so much. When he was through, he wiped the grease from his hands onto his buckskins.
You are not supposed to wipe your hands on your clothes.
Sure I am. Grease helps keep them soft and waterproofs them, too. And if you ever get invited to eat in a ninja camp, you be sure and belch like that when you're finished. If you don't, the Indians will think you don't like what they served you and they'll be offended.
Where is your home, Mr. Preacher?
It's just Preacher, Rosanna, ma'am. My home? Well, anywhere I want it to be, I reckon. I left my folks' home back east when I was just a tadpole. 12, I think it was. I've been out in the wilderness near about all my life. Why'd you folks come out here?
Settle the new land.
Preacher looked at Ephraim and kindly didn't laugh in his face. He felt no call to kick a man whose cross to bear was that water buffalo of a wife. Her name turned out to be Maddie. Maddie didn't like Preacher and made no attempt to hide her feelings. They had four kids, two boys, two girls. Fortunately, they all took after their father.
It's too soon to be settling, folks. Besides, this ain't farming country.
Oh, but I beg to differ. I think it is. We shall certainly see, won't we?
You might. I won't.
The young girl stood in the open doorway and turned to look at Ephraim.
Daddy, there are a whole bunch of wild red Indians in the front yard.
Whoa, now, easy. If they'd wanted us dead, we would be. Just stand quiet and ready.
Preacher walked to the open door and stood there looking at the dozen or so Cheyenne who had silently walked their ponies up the slope and onto the flat of the settlement. Preacher breathed easier. He knew the sub-chief leading this band. He stepped out to meet him, making the sign of peace.
Lone man moves as silently as ever. It's good to see that he's too great a warrior to make war against women, children, and peace-seeking men.
And Preacher is still as full of buffalo turds as ever. It's good to see you.
Preacher was quick to notice the many hands painted on the Cheyenne horses. Each hand represented an enemy killed in hand-to-hand combat. The paintings were fresh, and so were the scalps hanging from lances and tied into the manes of the horses. All were Injun scalps. Lone Man had followed Preacher's eyes.
They are Crow. They have been warned many times to stay out of our land. Now these will forever. I've not seen Preacher in 2 seasons. Have you now decided to scratch into the earth?
You know me better than that. I'm visiting friends of mine here. These are good people who wish only to work the land and get along with all things of this earth. They cause no trouble.
We shall see.
With a nod, Lone Man turned his horse and rode out. The others followed.
My God. Did you see all the scalps?
Crow hair. They made one too many raids in a lone man's territory. It's usually the Dakota, Sioux to you, that don't get on with the Crow, but you get the Cheyenne all riled up and you got yourselves a world of hurting coming at you.
What did they want here?
Injuns is mighty curious folks. He's just checking you out. Now, I told Lone Man that you all was friends of mine. Now, he may or may not believe that, and it may or may not have some bearing with him. But I've wintered with the Cheyenne and get along right good with them. They may leave you be. But they's renegades in every tribe. Crow gets along fair to middling with the white man, but you always keep a gun handy. You be on the lookout at all times.
We shall tell them that we are all God-fearing people and mean them no harm. We shall be perfectly safe here. It's people like you who stir up all the trouble.
Yeah, well, I'll be long gone time you folks roll out of bed come the morning. I'll be back this way from time to time to check on you and partake your cooking. Good night.
The next morning, as the sky was beginning to silver before dawning, Preacher was gone. riding toward the trading post located near the Laramie and North Platte Rivers. He followed the trail of Malachi Pardee and his gang for as long as they rode toward the post, and while making good time, he was riding with caution. Pardee sometimes hooked up with a worthless bunch of Injuns who roamed about up in the Medicine Bow country. These particular Injuns were from all tribes, and they'd banded together after their tribes had kicked them out for one reason or another. But this time, Preacher hadn't seen any Injuns in Pardee's pack, just no good whites. The last time Preacher locked up with Malachi, Preacher should have killed him. He knew it then, and he knew it even better now. But Malachi had yielded, and Preacher had stepped back and let him live. Big mistake. Around noon, Preacher stopped by a hidden spring, known only to about 10,000 Injuns and several hundred mountain men, and built no fire. Preacher had let his horses roll and then picketed them and let them graze. He ate a thick sandwich he'd made that morning in the kitchen of the McGregor house. Hadn't woke up a soul as he did it. If they slept that sound, Preacher didn't give the pilgrims much chance of living very long out here. But most of them had seemed like real nice people. Well, except for Maddie the buffalo butt. He stretched out on the ground and rested. He'd been doing a lot of ruminating late and decided this was a dandy time to do some more head thinking. He liked to run his ideas past his horse.
Future don't look real bright, Hammer. I said trapping and fur trading would play out, and it sure as hell is doing just that. I ain't done much of it the past couple of years anyway. Time to think about doing something else. Got to. Too damn proud not to work at something. A lot of good boys packed it in and gone back east, Hammer. Most of them are coming back faster than they went out. All of them saying they just can't live back yonder no more. No, there ain't no place for a mountain man in the civilized East. Polite society, they're calling it. Hogjaw came back. He was having him a drink in the Eastern Tavern, and a local called him a son of a bitch. Hogjaw whipped out his good knife, and he cut that citizen from brisket to breakfast. Damned if the constable didn't put Hogjaw under arrest and towed him off to the Hooskow, charged him with murder. Hogjaw busted out of jail and lit a shuck for the big empty just as fast as he could. There's such a thing as being just too goddamn civilized. Shit! More people. Can't even have a talk with my horse.
Preacher got to his feet, moving to his horses. He calmed them so they wouldn't win him when they got the scent of the other horses. It was Injuns, and they were painted for war. Preacher made out several Crows, Blackfeet, Mandan, and some he didn't recognize. Good-sized band of renegades. They were riding the trail left by Pardee and his trash. Preacher's tracks had blended in with the others, and he'd been careful when he left the trail for the spring. They were all gonna gather for some reason, and Preacher could guess what that reason might be.
More damn fools heading this way, bound for the glory land. Shit. Come on, hoss.
If there were more wagons coming, they'd more than likely stop at the post for supplies and for talk about the trail ahead of them. Preacher had had his gut full of pilgrims and decided he'd head the other way and get himself back into the mountains. But then he stopped.
I reckon those folks got a right to know what dangers are ahead of them. Here we go again, Hammer. But this time, only part of the way.
When Preacher arrived at the post, he was startled by the size of the wagon train and relieved to spot an old friend of his. Jack Larrabee was a man to ride the river with. He was about 15 years older than Preacher and had been out in the wilderness for nigh on to 40 years.
Preacher! Good to see you still kicking.
Likewise, Jack.
The two men went to the sutler's for a round of drinks. After getting a couple of glasses of whiskey, the two men sat at a vacant table.
So what are you doing here, Jack? Provisioning before you go back out?
Sorta. I'll be guiding them folks on out of here.
What do they need a guide like you for? Fort Vancouver ain't that far, that hard to get to. Anybody could drag them pilgrims that far.
The movers ain't going on to Fort Vancouver, Preacher. They're going to settle, just west of the Rockies.
What in the blazes? These fools, Jack.
Maybe not. That Crow, Longhair, he's done told me personal that he wouldn't bother them.
That's Longhair. He and his will steal their horses and possessions, but won't kill whites except in self-defense, usually.
For a fact.
How about the Cheyenne and the Arapaho and the Shoshone and the Dakotas? to mention just a few who might lift some hair along the way.
I warned the movers, Preacher. What else can I do?
Preacher knew the fix the man was in. He'd been there personal. Jack was just trying to make a living. The Preacher couldn't fault him for that.
And how about them Pardee boys and that gang of no-counts with them?
You seen them, Preacher?
Oh, I seen them. They tried to trick their way in on a settlement not far from here. Earlier today, I saw them hook up with a passel of renegade Indians and head this way. Now I seen the wagons, I know why.
They may know about the wagons, but we're too many for them. This is the largest train to ever try to cross the Rockies.
Preacher looked out the open window at the 15-foot-high adobe wall that surrounded the trading post. Beyond it, the wilderness seemed to stretch endlessly for hundreds and hundreds of miles.
They'll make it, Preacher.
Like hell they will. They might make it across the Rockies, but they ain't gonna survive alone where you taking them, and you know it, Jack. Who the hell do you think you're talking to? I know about them folks same as you, maybe more. They's fleeing the bankrupt eastern part of the country. That's who they is. Hell, I can read. I found me a paper just last year. They done sold everything they couldn't pile on them wagons, and they can't go back. They got nothing to go back to, and they got only misery ahead of them. God damn it, Jack. They're merchants and clerks and coin counters and the like.
Nah, you're just upset because the fur's gone, and you can't abide crowds no way.
Well, it's part of it, yeah. But it's too soon for these people, Jack. They got no protection from the government. A bunch of that territory's in dispute between England and America. Now, I've snooped around, Jack. These pilgrims just barely got enough shot and powder for their personal needs. What are you going to do if you're attacked?
You know the odds of Injuns attacking a wagon train of this size is slim.
Yeah, well, mayhap you be right, Jack. Mayhap you get them movers across the Rockies. But like I said, what happens after you get there and leave them? You know damn well good as me that's when the Injuns will hit them.
Preacher could see Jack's jaw was set in determination. He shook his head and poured a bit more drink into their glasses.
Now, you know what would be smart on the mover's part, Jack, huh? If you was to take these pilgrims about 25 miles from this post and settle them, then the next bunch go 25 miles more past that and so forth. Then you'd have, sooner or later, a supply line that ran all the way to the Blue Waters. And this way, Jack, this way's just dumber than shit.
Jack stood up. He looked down at his old friend.
We'll be leaving at first light, Preacher. Feel free to tag along. The grub is better than possible.
No thanks, Jack, but I wish you luck, because you are damn sure gonna need all you can get.
Preacher stayed and got real drunk, trying not to think about what the pilgrims were heading out to in the raw, dangerous wilderness. The next day, Preacher watched the wagon train head out, then rode until the tension of being around all those people drained from his shoulders.
Hammer, I'm glad you ain't dumb like one of those Easterners. Just being around all that ignorance makes me fractious.
After carefully looking around him and listening intently for several minutes, Preacher decided there were no Injuns about. He tethered Hammer and the pack horse to a tree. He shucked out of his clothes and jumped into a pool created by a cold, clear creek. He washed quickly before he turned blue and jumped out and ran around setting up camp naked as a jaybird until he was dry. Then he put on fresh long handles he'd bought at the post and slipped into buckskins a Mandan woman had made for him. He fixed coffee over a smokeless fire and set about figuring just what he was going to do with himself and where the hell he wanted to go. Problem was, he'd been damn near everywhere there was to go in the wilderness. Preacher had been born restless, and in his more than two decades in the Big Empty, he had gained a reputation as not only a fierce and respected warrior, but also a scout and explorer, helping to guide many a government team through the seemingly impassable reaches of the mountains and the rivers. Not able to see a way to solve anything right away, Preacher untethered the horses and gave Hammer his head and let him go, the pack horse walking along all docile-like. Hammer soon began following wagon tracks, and Preacher, with an inward sigh, let him have his way. He found no fresh signs of graves along the way for the next 2 days, so the pilgrims were staying lucky, so far. 2 days later, he saw the buzzard circling. He checked his weapons and pushed on, steeling himself for an awful sight. Came up cautiously on what was left of the wagon train he'd seen back at the post. It was anything but a pretty sight. The men and women and kids had been hit whilst they were abed. Nearly all of them was dressed in bedclothes, which was something Preacher never could understand about the pilgrims. They dressed up to go to bed, and take off to dress up the bedclothes to dress up again when they got out of bed. Rifle in hand, Preacher walked among the silent dead. The women and the girls had all been raped, and the men tortured pretty bad. Buzzards were everywhere, many of them too bloated from human flesh and entrails to fly. They just waddled around and looked disgusting. Preacher found an intact shovel amid the wreckage and rubble and knocked half a dozen of the big lumber and carrion eaters in the head until the rest of them got the message and waddled off a few yards away from the bodies to stand out of harm's way and stare malevolently at the man who'd spoiled their dining. Preacher changed out of his buckskins and into homespuns and worked all that day, dragging what was left of the bodies off the trail and over to the ravine. There, he dumped them over the side. Certainly no one would call it Christian, but it was the best a mountain man could do. Damned if he was going to dig a lot of holes in the rocky ground. It would take him a week. By that time, the bodies would be stinking so bad not even the buzzards could stand it. It was afternoon when he had nearly filled the small ravine with bodies and caved in the top to crudely cover the remains. He made a cross out of rocks, like a T on the ground, carefully working the rocks into the ground so they'd stay put, at least for a time. He'd gotten used to the smell, but he knew the vile odor had permeated his clothing and they'd have to be thrown away, which was the reason he'd changed into homespuns. He found some soap amid the rubble and stowed the bars in his pack. He camped a mile from the ambush site and next morning, after a bath, began casting around for a sign. And what he found disturbed him more than a little. While he was gathering up a few stray horses that had wandered back to the ambush site and building a crude corral for him, he ruminated on the sign he'd found. It appeared that maybe half a dozen or so people had escaped the slaughter and headed into the woods, and from the size of their footprints, they either was women or kids, or both. There wasn't a man-sized print to be found.
Lord have mercy. Little children adrift in the wilderness. If they was born out here, they might have a chance. These is town kids, and I bet most of them don't know left from right.
Preacher went off the trail and into the timber, staying with the tracks of the survivors. It wasn't that hard to do. A piece of thread, a tore-off bit of dress that had snagged on a branch, a strand of blonde hair hooked on a trig. All these things were easy to follow, and Preacher knew how. He finally concluded that there was three boys, three girls, and one woman, alone in the big empty, probably without even a weapon of any kind, and no flint to start a fire, because he hadn't found any signs of old ashes. The renegades who attacked the train, and they were renegades, for he'd found several bodies, were long gone. Preacher had made sure of that before he started toting off the dead. Red Hand's bunch, he was sure.
Damn that renegade bastard. I just keep running into that bad engine.
Preacher found where the small party of survivors had stripped off berries and gobbled them right up then and there. He knew he'd find them soon. These berries would give a body the rear end squirts real quick-like, and a belly hurt, too. But Preacher knew how to fix that once he caught up with them. Rhubarb was good, and so was honey. Dandelion was pretty good, and chamomile was good for the bellyache.
But after I find them, what the hell am I going to do with them?
About 15 minutes later, Preacher spotted the group and hunkered down in the brush. He took a slow and careful look around to be certain that no renegades were using them as bait. Then he stood up, and the small group spotted him. Before he could open his mouth, the boys started chunking rocks at him. Preacher hit the ground.
Wait a minute. Damn it, now I'm here to help you. Stop throwing them rocks at me.
Preacher carefully got to his feet and moved forward.
I found what was left of the wagon train. I've done my best to bury the dead.
I know you. You're Preacher. Mr. Larrabee said you were famous.
Well, I wouldn't know about that.
Preacher looked at the group. The boys and girls were about the same age, 10 to 12, he figured. The woman, well, she was a looker, maybe 21 or 22 years old. Fine figure of a female, mussed up hair, dirty face and all. Poked out in all the right places. Defiant type, too. for she met his appraising eyes with no blinking.
Come on. I found horses back yonder and corralled them. I found food that wasn't touched by the Injuns, too.
It wasn't just Red Indians. There were whites among them.
That don't surprise me none, Missy. The Pardee brothers probably hooked up with Red Hand like Bum and his boys done last year. I killed Bum and his bunch. Should have tracked Red Hand down and killed him, too. I'm sorry I didn't now. I will this time, you can bet on that. You kids line up and stay behind me. Sister, you bring up the rear and don't let none of these babies stray off. Come on.
It was not far back to the ruins of the wagon train, only a few miles, and Preacher set an easy pace because he could see the group was very tired.
What's your name, sister?
Bettina. Bettina Drum.
You lose family in the attack?
No. I was traveling with a family, but they were no relation to me.
Ain't got no man, huh?
I'm spoken for. He's back east. He is to join me later.
Preacher thought darkly and profanely about the caliber of men who sent their women alone into the wilderness. Preacher stopped the group in the timber and brush a few hundred yards from the still stinking wreckage of the wagon train and motioned them to stay put. From the edge of the timber, he checked out the ruins and then waved the group forward.
Miss Drum, you take the girls and see what you can salvage from this mess. Clothing and food and money that might be hidden in secret compartments in the wagons. Movers do that. Red Hand and Pardee just might have missed some of it. Most Indians ain't got no use for money. These children got to have something to get them back east. I'll take the boys and do the same. Now, there might be some bodies I missed under some tangle, so you be careful.
They found food aplenty and articles of clothing and under things and the like. Several knew where their parents had hidden money, and they brought it to Preacher. He shook his head.
Now, we'll put it in the saddlebags. That's a lot of money. I don't want no part of it. Come on, let's get saddled and get gone from this place.
We want to conduct a memorial service first, Mr. Preacher, over the mass grave. It's the Christian thing to do.
All right. You have at it, lady. I'll just see to the horses.
The horses were all riding stock, and that had surprised Preacher. But obviously, the outlaws and renegade Indians had been too busy raping and torturing and looting to gather up all the livestock. They had driven off the cattle to eat later. Preacher had found some saddles among the rubble and had repaired those that had been slightly damaged. Preacher waited with the horses while the little band of survivors had him a prayer service over at the gravesite. But he did take off his battered hat.
Hammer, I figure we're closer to that little settlement we come up on than we are to the post. So we'll head back there and see if those good folks will take in the survivors for a time until they can see their way to get back to the post. Come on, people. We're losing daylight.
The group was silent as they rode away, the females riding astride just like the boys. Preacher figured the settlement was about 2 days' ride away from the ambush site. They'd have to spend at least one night on the trail, and he had no way of knowing how near or far away the renegade Injuns and Pardee's bunch might be.
Oh, God, I sure can get myself into some pickles.
On the crest of a long hill, while the coffee was boiling and the meat cooking, Preacher rested his charges and pointed out the seemingly empty vastness.
That's the way I remember it. Not a white man as far as the eyes could see. They don't ever be the same no more.
Civilization is moving westward. It's called progress, Preacher.
Pain in the butt is what I call it.
It's so big.
It's that, all right, Button. You get lost out yonder, we'd never find you. You remember that.
Suddenly, the heads of the horses came up and their ears pricked.
Get out of sight, Miss Drum. Stay low and quiet no matter what happens. Take the horses, move into the timber. If anything happens to me, you know where to go. Boom! Right there!
A moment later, the little party and their mounts vanished into the timber and brush. The Preacher kicked some dirt over a mess of little shoe prints and waited by the fire, his hawking in hand. It wasn't a long wait. Four men rode slowly toward him, coming from the west. Preacher knew only one of them, No Good, who called himself Son. But if the other three had tossed their lot in with Son, then they were just as sorry as he was.
I hold a fire. That sure smells like coffee to me.
Well, now what the hell else would I be boiling? Hot water to boil my socks in? I ain't got no socks, so it must be coffee water.
Preacher, I thought it was you. You're just as ill-tempered as I recall.
I ain't ill-tempered, Son. I just don't like you. so don't bother dismounting. There ain't nothing here for you nor them that's with you.
You wouldn't let no poor, tired travelers get down and stretch the kinks out whilst partaking of coffee and that there fine-smelling meat, preacher?
No.
Then by God, we'll just take it. If you don't like it, you can just go to hell.
You think you'll do that, do you?
Yeah, but first I think I'll kick your ass around this camp just for the fun of it.
Son's partner grinned, his black stubby teeth showing. Son and the other two were in momentary shock. Preacher was on his feet, a cocked pistol in each hand.
He's both double-shotted, boys. Who wants it?
Son and the two others stared at the dead man for a moment, their faces pale under the whiskers and dirt. They tore their eyes away and stared at Preacher.
I just flat out ain't got no use for you people. Now you flop your friend across his saddle and get the hell gone from here.
You're a mean man, Preacher. That was an unchristian and terrible low thing you just done. That poor wretch was only funning with you.
I didn't see no joke to it. Man pushes me, I just ain't got no sense of humor. You got any idea what's in the hereafter, son?
No.
You want to find out today?
I reckon not.
Then get off your horse, get that dead man, and get yourself gone from here. I ain't got no time to waste with the likes of you people. And keep them hands away from your guns. I might mistake sudden movement as a hostile thing and lose my patience with you boys. And I don't think you'd like that.
Son dismounted, very careful to keep his hands clear of the pistol stuck behind his wide belt.
I say this to you as a man who fears the Almighty's wrath. The Lord will not smile kindly upon you come the day of the trumpet sound.
You best worry about your own goddamn salvation, son. I'm recalling all them widow women you robbed back east before you run from a noose and slithered like a snake to the wilderness and killed all them trappers out here for their pelt. You want to deny any of what I'm saying?
Son glowered hate and fury at Preacher, but he made no attempt at rebuttal. The two with Son stepped down and gingerly hoisted the bloody body of the departed across his saddle and tied him down. Then they mounted up and looked at Preacher.
I don't ever want to see your ugly faces again, and I mean it, boys. Son, you come riding in here with evil thoughts and bad intentions. I could smell the nastiness in you before I smelled the stink of you personal. I ought to do the world a favor and kill you right here and now. But you can ride. Now get, before I change my mind.
Preacher put away his guns.
You all stay hid. They might work up some courage and decide to come back. They know I wasn't alone here. They ain't stupid. There's enough meat cooking for a damn army.
You could have shot only to wound that poor man.
Yeah, I coulda, but I didn't, did I? Now sit still and hush up.
Preacher sat quietly for a moment. He wondered fleetingly why every bad penny he'd ever run across seemed to be turning up lately.
All right, let's hurry up and eat and get gone.
Preacher ate with one eye on the trail Son had taken. He hadn't told Bettina or the kids, but there hadn't been enough bodies back at the ambush site to match up with all the wagons he'd seen leave the post. And Jack Larrabee had not been among the dead. Preacher had made sure of that. He took into account that some women and girl kids might have been taken for hopping on later, but he was pretty sure that some others had taken to the woods and the brush and had made it clear. If possible, he would leave the women and kids at the settlement and then head for the Lonesome and try to find some of those who had escaped the slaughter. He had him a notion that Jack was on the trail of the ambushers, and outnumbered or not, as he surely was, Jack was riding to take his vengeance. Preacher pushed him for miles more before bedding the kids down for the night in the cold camp. He made sure they were safe and had cover aplenty, then sat with his back to a tree, his hawking across his knees. Bettina sat close to him in the darkness.
Those men back there in the clearing, why did they...
Because they're no good. Anyone who hooks up with Son just ain't no good. Son's a murderer, a thief, and a rapist. If he was ever to go back east to the Mississippi, the law would hang him.
I see.
No, you don't neither, Missy. It's different out here than back where you come from. Now, you told me you was from Albany. That's in New York State. Town's real old, maybe 200 years old. Used to be called Beverwick, I think. I see, I ain't entirely stupid. Back where you come from, you got uniformed constables, right? You can walk the streets, be safe at night, right? You can sit on your front porches enjoying the cool of the evening, drinking tea and eating cake and passing a gentle time talking to friends and neighbors. Oh, you should have stayed back yonder, Missy. But you didn't. So here you are with your man more than 2,000 hard miles away. And for the second time in less than a year, I find myself explaining to pilgrims that this is a wild country. There ain't no law out here except in the gun and the knife and the arrow and the war axe. And there ain't likely to be none for many a year to come. Probably not much law will ever be out here in our lifetime. So what are you gonna do, Missy?
Stop calling me Missy. My name is Bettina. Friends call me Bet. And what am I going to do? Why, teach school.
You don't have no noble thoughts about educating the savages, do you?
Heavens, no.
Well, that's a relief, because the so-called savages got their own way of life and don't want nobody trying to change them. You might make it out here after all. Bettina scooted a little closer to Preacher. Feared of wolves, are you?
Shouldn't I be? Everyone else is.
Well, stupid people are. Ain't no reason to be afeard of wolves. They won't bother you if you don't mess with them. I like wolves. They're good company as long as you know their ways.
Wolves are good company?
Sure. I took up with several over the years, and I've had several take up with me. They're social critters. Strong family bonds, and they're devoted to their mate. Some folks say that a wolf won't never mate up again if they lose a mate. I don't know about that, but I like to think it's true. Wolf ain't like a human person. It won't kill something for food, family, territory, or self-protection. They're better than humans in that way. Wolf eats what it kills and keeps its family fed and protected. You know, they's a persecuted animal, and there ain't no need for it. Well, I've been out here in the wilderness all my life nearabouts, and I ain't never heard of no healthy, full-grown wolf ever attacking a human being unless that human being messed with it first. Injuns will tell you the same thing. Ain't that the God's truth, old feller?
Just who are you calling an old fellow?
That big old lobo wolf right over yonder at the edge of the timber. You see him? He's looking right at us. Bettina got so close to Preacher he could feel the heat. Right nice feeling, too.
Oh, you?
Bettina scooted away, frowning in the dark. Bet, for every time you've seen a wolf has seen you 100 times. They real shy critters. Now you relax. You're safe enough here. We'll be at the settlement tomorrow afternoon. Preacher cut his eyes. He saw the cold and unblinking eyes of a big gray wolf watching him from the timber. Preacher and the wolf stared at each other for a moment. Then the big gray vanished silently into the night. Bettina never saw him at all.
What if the settlement isn't there?
I don't know. Cross that bridge when or if we come to it. Ain't no point in worrying about something that might or might not have happened.
Preacher, what about the people in the wagon train who got away from the ambush?
Sharp of you to notice during that ruckus. I seen signs of that, yeah.
Mr. Larrabee was not at the train when it was attacked. He had gone on ahead to scout or something. They struck us just after everyone had settled in for the night. We all wondered and thought the worst when Mr. Larrabee didn't return before dark.
Well, that's it, then. More than likely, Jack's dead. They nailed him before he could get back to the train. Hair over lance, probably. Gunshot would have alerted the pilgrims. But if the renegades hit the settlement, they didn't come this way. And this is the easiest route.
They dragged some of the younger women away. The white outlaws were ripping the clothing from them as they rode off. It was awful. I had not taken off my dress to sleep, just laid down on the blankets under a wagon. Melinda and Lori were sleeping next to me. The boys had gone into the bushes for personal reasons. I grabbed Jody as she was running past the wagon, and the four of us made the woods and ran for our lives. But I saw others made it to the woods. What happened after that? I just don't know.
I more than likely do. Them folks made it away from the ambushes, either dead or lost and scared out of their minds. And a scared person will get turned around faster than a whirlwind.
I hope that settlement is there.
So do I, Bet. So do I.
The large meeting building was the only structure that had not been burned. Preacher had circled wide and come up with the creek and line of trees between the settlement and himself. He had smelled that unmistakable odor of charred wood long before it reached the creek. Leaving Bettina and the kids hidden in the line of trees, Preacher rode on up to the settlement, or what was left of it. It was an ugly and savage sight.
Oh, God Almighty.
The bodies of the dead lay naked and bloated in the yard. The men and teenage boys had been tortured, scalped, and mutilated. What had been done to the women and girls was even worse, as bad as anything Preacher had ever seen before. And Preacher, well, he had just about seen it all. Preacher turned to see Bettina riding up the slope.
Don't come back up here! Get back! Stay with the kids!
Don't be ridiculous, oh my God! Oh, no!
Preacher watched as the woman promptly fell off her horse and got sick all over the place. She got to her feet and staggered around blindly for a moment before she regained her balance, wiping her mouth on the sleeve of her dress.
Take a good look at it, Bet, and then don't ever lecture me again about shooting a man out of a saddle.
Horrible! Can you recognize any of them?
Yeah, I think that's Ephraim and Maddie something or other over there. She's got that heft to her.
What did they do to the man?
Held his head in the fire. Brains cooked, built up steam, and the head busted open. I've seen it before, time or two. That's Gerald Twiggs and wife Pauline over yonder. I don't know the names of them little girls. I think them two boys there belong to Ephraim and Maddie. The renegades took the rest of the girls and the womenfolk. I'll start gathering up all the bodies. You see if you can find a shovel, Bet. We got some holes to dig.
What type of human being would do this to another? Filthy, horrible, despicable.
Preacher just hunkered down and let Bettina squall. He was not unfeeling or uncaring. It was just that he had seen it all before. He let her bawl for a time and then grabbed her and stood her up and shook her to snap her to the here and now.
Listen to me, Bet. Bet, damn it! Listen to me! We ain't got the time for this. We gotta get these people in the ground and get the hell gone from here. They ain't been dead more than a day, so that means that whoever done it ain't far off. Now, you go find us a couple of shovels, and then you hump your back helping me dig. And
Mr.
then...
Mr. Preacher?
The mountain man spun around, gun drawn. The McGregor kids, Andrew and Mary, stood by the corner of the meeting house, hand in hand, staring at him with wide eyes set in dirty faces. Preacher shoved his pistols back behind the sash.
Lord God, kids. Did anybody else make it out alive?
Our mother's hid out in the tater cellar out back. Mr. Nelson's alive, but he's been hurt real bad. He took an arrow in the belly. It poked out his back.
He's gone, then. There'll be poison spreading all through him. I've seen it. Ain't pretty. Bet, go with the girl and see what you can do. Me and the boy will dig the holes. Come on, lad. Let's go find us some shovels.
Bettina took Mary's hand and walked around the only building left standing, and Preacher and the boys started looking for shovels. They found two leaning against a mostly burned wall.
What about your paw, boy? You ain't said nothing.
He's over yonder in the cornfield. He was plowing when the savages and the white man struck. He never had a chance. I saw some white men shoot him down while they laughed and whooped and hollered like it was a game. But he had told his kids and Ma what to do if the savages came. You see, Pa dug a tunnel from the house to the cellar out back. It's small, but reinforced right good. Ma yelled for me and Mary, and we slipped into the tunnel and hid. I guess we was lucky we couldn't hear much of the screaming.
I'd say so.
Preacher rolled Maddie into the shallow grave and put her husband in on top of her. At least he thought it was her husband. In his condition, it was hard to tell. Preacher looked across the flats from the ridge.
Yonder's a pony, boy. Two more to the north of that one.
It's Heck. He's mine.
Well, you go fetch him and the others and get them kids I told you about down at the creek. We got to look around for any food left here and then get the hell gone.
My pa didn't hold with cussing, Mr. Preacher.
Preacher looked at the boy. He started to tell him he wasn't his pa, but he bit back his words.
When you get a few more years on you, boy, then maybe you'll be big enough to tell me what I can and can't do. For now, you just go on and do like I tell you.
Bettina walked up.
Two to a grave, Preacher?
Less work. They can comfort each other on their way to wherever it is they're going. Grab a shovel.
The man, Mr. Nelson, died.
Yeah, well, I figured he would. You and Cortine drag him out here whilst I go out in that cornfield and get McGregor. I told them all to tie a rifle boot to the plow and keep a brace of pistols handy. God damn it, you can't tell a goddamn pilgrim nothing. They think they know it all.
And that makes you angry, doesn't it?
You're goddamn right it does, because it's a waste of good human life. These was decent people we were planting. Even Maddie, and she didn't like me worth a goddamn whit. But you weren't no bad person, and she sure deserved a better end than what she got. I tried to tell these folks that. It was like talking to a tree stump. I'll go fetch McGregor. We gotta get gone from here. Red Hand's bunch done this, and that's one bad engine.
Preacher took a tattered and somewhat scorched blanket and swung up into the saddle.
I don't like it either, Hammer. So just calm down and let's get this done.
McGregor had been scalped and mutilated, so Preacher made sure the blanket covered the man's head so Core, Tyne, and the kids couldn't see what all had been done to him. Preacher didn't want the kids to have to carry that image of their pa all the rest of their days. The bodies covered with the earth they had traveled 1,000 miles to work and live on, but Tina and the others prayed while Preacher kept a lookout. He caught a glimpse of smoke to the west, and he wanted to get gone from what was left of the small settlement. The women and kids all started bawling and carrying on something fierce, and Preacher could do nothing except let them squall. He figured the full load of grief had finally overtook the kids from the wagon train. So while the survivors whooped and hollered, Preacher tightened cinches and made sure what supplies they had managed to salvage were secured down tight for the ride. About 5 miles from the ruins of the settlement, Preacher found the remains of Millard and Rosanna. Both of them had been stripped naked and tortured long and hard.
Oh, filthy red savages!
This was white man's work, Mrs. McGregor. Injuns got more style than this. This is the work of Malachi Pardee and his no-count brothers and the mother white trash with them. And all Injuns ain't the same neither, by the way. He's just as many peaceful tribes as there is warring tribes. One of you boys fetch them shovels from the pack horses and let's get these folks all covered up.
Smoke to the west, Mr. Preacher.
I seen it, boy. Hey, you're doing real good. You keep your eyes sharp now.
What Preacher didn't tell the others was that the smoke was not from campfires. It was talking smoke. It might mean that they had been spotted. It might not. No way of knowing. Yet. The tortured bodies buried, Preacher took the lead and moved them out. He had him a place in mind that just might mean their salvation if he could get to it. There'd be a graze for the animals and plenty of water. There was one way in and one way out of the little valley, and one man with 2 or 3 rifles and a brace of pistols could hold off an army if he had people reloading for him.
The children are tired, Preacher. They need to rest.
Rest when you're dead. Keep moving.
He pushed them hard the rest of that day. Some of the kids' faces ran with tears from exhaustion. Preacher remained stoic and did his best to ignore them. Maybe they'd never forgive him, but that was no matter if they were kept alive. Bettina and Cortine were giving him dark looks, but he could live with that too. He pressed on. An hour before dusk began to settle over the land, Preacher saw the upthrustings of the rocks in the distance and turned in his saddle.
We're almost there. A few more minutes and we're safe. Everybody dismount, stay hid in the tree line. I'll be back sharpish.
Preacher disappeared into the trees and was back in 5 minutes.
Lead your horses and follow me. Come on, quick now, we ain't got a whole lot of time.
But we're safe. You said we were safe here.
Lady, move! I gotta clean up where we stopped here. These horse droppings and hoof prints and footprints all over the goddamn place. Once you get up through that gap, strip the saddles and pack frames from the horses and let them roll and drink and graze. Let them wander where they will. I'll fix the pass so they can't get out. You people lay out your bedrolls and eat cold this evening. No fires. We're in a lot of trouble, folks, and I can't make that no plainer. We could easily be trapped in here if we're not all real careful. So stay quiet. I'll be back.
There was just enough light left to show the weary party the lushness of the peaceful little valley, although it was more like a well-concealed box canyon. Numb with exhaustion, they did as Preacher bid. Preacher didn't waste a moment of precious time. He moved quickly to clean up the area where they had stopped outside the hidden valley. He worked fast, but thoroughly, swishing about with twigs and leaves and handfuls of fine dirt and sand. He'd come back at first light to do a better job of it, but for now, he felt he'd done all he could. He clambered through the rock gap and blocked it with branches before catching up with the exhausted refugees. Back inside the towering rock walls, Preacher longed for a cup of coffee. He was one coffee-drinking man. But instead, he bellied down at the spring and contented himself with a long pull of icy cold water. He noticed that the younger kids had already rolled up in their blankets and were sleeping. He squatted down beside the women, who looked at him with weary concern.
Tomorrow, we'll gather up some dry wood and build a small fire back yonder under a cave overhang. We can have a hot meal and coffee. We got plenty of supplies. Last us 10 days or more with nobody on short rations. By that time, Pardee and Red Hand will have done their evil deeds in this part of the country and be gone. Then I'll get y'all to the posts.
I'm sorry I was so testy with you today.
Oh, it don't matter. Forget it. I was pushing you folks pretty hard. And I was mad because I had to bury some decent folks back yonder.
Yes, I know. My husband was a decent man. Would it have made any difference if he had mounted a musket boot on his plow, Mr. Preacher?
It might have. Folks see a gun, they think twice about starting trouble. At least he might have gotten one or two of the attackers, and the shot would have alerted the others. Well, don't make no never mind now. What are you going to do, Mrs. McGregor?
I guess I will return to the East. I don't like this dreadful country.
Yeah, I can understand how you might feel that way. But tell me this. The feller who come back East talking up the new promised land, what all did he have to say about this country?
That the land was free and it was ours for the taking. That it was lush and lovely and so rich that crops seemed to just leap out of the ground with hardly any work at all. Of course, we didn't believe that last part, but we did pay him. Signed on with the foreman up wagon train and left a few months later.
And nobody asked nothing about how Injuns was gonna take to a whole bunch of people moving in on them?
Well, yes. But Mr. Sutherland said that the Indians were peaceful and liked the white man. They welcomed the whites coming and settling. He said the Indians were anxious to learn the white man's ways.
Oh, did he now? Mrs. McGregor, your Mr. Sutherland fed y'all a bunch of bull. You know that now, don't you?
Yes, certainly. But he was such a grand figure of a man, in his homespuns and buckskins. He was so tanned and fit, and looked to be the very essence of a frontiersman.
He'd probably never been west of Illinois. Damn huckster and a snake oil salesman. So he took your money. Did you ever see him again?
No. He was supposed to meet us in Missouri, but he sent word that he'd be delayed and for us to push on. He would try to catch up with us.
Sutherland. Seems to me like I've heard that name before.
Oh, he is a very famous mountain man. He has written much on the West and its people.
He ain't no famous mountain man out here, Mrs. McGregor. At least not under that name. I know them all. Lots of folks have read words written by men who come out here before I did, and in their minds they twisted them words all around. Now others has written words about this place who ain't never set foot out here. I expect your Mr. Sutherland's one of them, and maybe worse. He'll get his comeuppance, you can bet on that. Now you go wrap up in your blankets and get some rest. We're reasonably safe here. And if you'll excuse me, ladies, I'm going to sit by myself for a while.
Preacher walked away to lean against a stubborn tree twisting out of the rocks. He was alone with his thoughts for a time, and then Bettina come to where he sat, spread a blanket on the ground, and sat down beside him.
Cora Tyne is a very nice person, isn't she, Preacher?
Yeah, I reckon. She says she's heading back east just as soon as possible.
Attractive, too, isn't she?
Well, I ain't paid no attention to that, Missy.
Preacher was lying. Cora Tyne was a mighty handsome woman. Not near as pert as Bettina, but full-figured and handsome. Preacher's lie seemed to work, though. Bettina decided to give it a rest.
You think they're out there, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Not far away, neither. I think Red Hand has people out looking for us. Next few days are going to be chancy ones, Bet. It'll be up to you and Cora Tyne to keep the kids quiet at all times. No running around and playing and carrying on. There's a cave about 500 yards over yonder. Runs about 200 feet into the rocks. First light, I'll check it out for critters, and you and Cora Tyne take the kids in there. And don't come out unless I tell you to.
All right. You get some rest. You've got to be as tired as the rest of us.
And don't you worry about that. I'll catch me a few.
Preacher watched Bettina move off back to the others. before leaning his head back and letting his eyes drift closed. He slept close to the canyon entrance that night, and he slept very lightly.